originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and a very pleasant Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you with us on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming or via podcast. You're doing that on our website at horseracingradio.net. Excited for the next hour, as not only are we going to visit with a trainer who is making his first appearance on the show, which means this is another brand new edition of Trainer Talk, but we should also point out that this is National Tequila Day, and I think that's music to the ears of my co-host, the Pontiff over here. JT, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's probably, what, 1 to 9 that you're going to sip on some tequila at some point today.
That's probably true, yes. As my old employee Doug O'Neill always says, cardiologist in a bottle.
How many bottles do you have at the house
now? There's probably like 4 on the bar right now of varying degrees.
Ooh, okay. So, try them all?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. nothing gets to the bar unless I've had some first.
I actually, believe it or not, I actually saw that somebody had a post on social media yesterday about today being National Tequila Day, and you were the first person I thought of.
Well, I'm honored. Mexico thanks you.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, let's get right to our guest here tonight. He has trained 283 winners, more than $10 million in earnings from those 283 victories, and he is trainer Eddie Barker, who joins us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Eddie, how about for you? Are you a tequila guy?
No, I'm a Coors Light once in a while. That's it.
That's good.
When is National Coors Light Day?
Every day.
Everything.
Well, listen, thanks for taking the time, buddy. I mentioned those 283 career victories and that $10 million in earnings. You've had a lot of success throughout the course of your career. Was this love of horses something that you've always had ever since you were a little kid?
No, not actually, Mike. I got into horse racing like in my mid-40s, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
What got you into it?
Well, I owned a retail feed and supply company out on Eastern Long Island. And I ended up collecting a bill that a farm owed me, and I took a mare in full, believe it or not. It was either that or I got nothing. So that's... So in any event, 3 or 4 years later, we raced him. I had him with a trainer in New York, an old hands-on guy by the name of Tommy Miles, a really, really good horseman. And we had some luck. I think we won probably 2 or 3 races with that horse, but it was very exciting. And then I got bit by the virus, equine virus, I guess it is, you know. And... I had claimed a few other horses myself as an owner, and I met this trainer down in Delaware. His name is Everett Pratt. Again, an old school hands-on type trainer, and I used to go down on the weekends, take my daughters down there, and I kind of got bit by the training bug, I guess, you know, and. Everett taught me as much as he could teach me on weekends and for probably 6 or 8 months. And Then I went to work for a trainer in New York for no pay for a year, which he liked. But in any event, I did that purposely to gain as much knowledge as I could. And, you know, I was like a little sponge. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I picked everybody's brain as much as I could. And that's how I got into the horse racing business.
That's great. That's a great story. You know, trainers love that free help, and a lot of times, like if somebody's working for you for nothing and they show up every day, that's like fantastic. That means they're super interested. You know, they want to do something with the knowledge they're gaining. They're not just they're taking up space. You know,
yeah.
So that's cool.
And I did. I worked my tail off. Let me tell you. I mean, I rubbed four horses for them. I set up a feeding program. You know, and any time I had questions on horses that I was having a little difficulty with, I would call Everett up and, you know, in any event, it was extremely good knowledge. And I worked with some really nice people that are still around today, as a matter of fact. So that's basically how I got started. Myself and a friend of mine bought a maiden. I think we bought him privately. I can't even remember. That's so long ago. But his name was Dr. Curo. And believe it or not, he won his first three races. But two of those races were dead heats. And two dead heats in less than 30 days. Can you believe it?
Wow.
Wow.
Nicky Santagata was on one, and Michelle Luttrell was on the other. Hmm. And two dead heats in less than 30 days, and I haven't had a dead heat since.
Well, that's good. You don't have to split the pots.
Yeah, right. But it was that's amazing. I can't imagine that's ever been done. And dead heats don't come around that often. But to have two on the same horse and in a month was like incredible. You know.
Yeah, that's pretty spectacular. Who was the trainer, Eddie, that you spent that year with working for free?
Dennis Breider.
Okay.
Yeah, he's. Okay. A nice fellow. I mean, I knew him from, I knew him through a couple of friends of mine, and, you know, and I told him exactly what I wanted to do, and I did it for a year, and like I said, I went out and got my own horses, and that year I claimed a horse called Christian's Baby for $16,000, and I bought a horse from Dennis called Windy Target, and we went up to Saratoga. As a matter of fact, I was one of the first trainers ever to rent stalls at the Saratoga Harness Track. In those days, you weren't getting a stall in Saratoga unless you've been on the grounds about 10 years. But anyway, I won my first two races up here with that horse, Christian's Baby. And then we went up and ran second to a horse called, I know Julie Crone rode the horse. I can't remember the name of the horse. But we ran second in the New York Derby, and then we came back and ran second in the Lawrence Realization. And then I won two or three more races with him, and that got things started. And as a matter of fact, that horse, Windy Target, he was my third victory in Saratoga. So my first year up here, I was 3-for-3. I said, what's so hard about this place?
Yeah. It's amazing how that works, isn't it? You just think this is like the easiest game. Why didn't I do this before? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's just, beginner's luck, I suppose. I don't know, but it was a lot of fun. And, I kind of kept like 6 or 7, 8 horses for maybe 10 to 12 years. I trained for one fella for about 8 or 9 years, and we had a lot of success. We claimed some really good horses and had a lot of fun. And basically, I didn't really want to train for anybody else. It was a really good relationship. And then, unfortunately, he had a stroke, and next thing I know, I was almost out of business.
Oh, geez.
But anyway, you pick up by your bootstraps and get going again. So, and basically that's how it all started, I guess.
When did you saddle your first horse on your own? Was that sometime around the early to mid 90s?
Yeah, 93, I believe, Mike.
Okay. Did you ever think at that point you'd still be doing this 25, 26 years later?
I knew then I wanted to do it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still do. I love this game, and it's, you know, it's not, certainly it's not about the money. You can be assured of that, but it's, you know, it's really a passion, and most people back here, I believe, have the same type of passion also.
Yeah, it's more of a lifestyle than
career choice. You know, down in New York, I live 75 miles from the track. I leave my house at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I get to the barn at 4:15, 7 days a week. And you know what? I can't wait to get there sometime. So, you know, it's still there after 27 years.
Yeah. People don't understand that. Like, oh, you have to get up so early. And, I mean, the minute you wake up, because you don't need to set an alarm after a while, and it never goes away. I mean, you just can't wait to get to the barn. There's just something about it that draws you in. And I've never been able to put my finger on what it is that makes you want to get up that early and go to the barn. But, I mean, you just get so excited, you know, that it's a new day and you're going to the barn. Mm-hmm. It's like you're a little kid every day.
Yeah.
You were in the business before as like selling, you know, horse products and feed and stuff. Did you have some kind of horse background or how'd you fall into that?
None. Zero.
Zero.
Zero. So I taught myself, Jude. When I first was around for that first year and a half, I couldn't ask enough people questions and try to absorb as much as I possibly could and do as much as I could, hands-on type of thing, you know. And, back then, and it's a little different now, trainers helped you out. Trainers helped other trainers out. And I don't see that so much anymore, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a different game now. In the old days, even the Hall of Fame trainers would, you know, give you advice, or if you asked for it, they would help you. You know, they'd walk over to your barn and, you know, pick up the horse's foot or do whatever. You know, nowadays that you don't see that very often.
No, it's kind of a different game, and I remember I was really struggling sometime in the late 90s, I guess it was, with like six or seven kind of bad horses. This is before I started training for Mr. Smith. And I was in the barn with Jimmy Bond. And I was in the barn with him for almost 2 years. And he knew I was getting a little frustrated and a little, down on myself because they were just horses that couldn't compete in Belmont, you know. And he said to me one day, he says, listen, why don't you, you know, he says, you know, you're a good trainer. You're a really good worker. You know, don't give up on yourself. He says, why don't you take these horses up to the Finger Lakes? And he says, you go up there, you win a lot of races. You'll win a bunch of races. You'll make some money and you'll get your head back on straight. So I tried. I called up to get 7 stalls and they wouldn't give them to me.
No.
So Jimmy called up, and next thing I know, I was on my way to the Finger Lakes, and he was right. We made, I think I won 9 out of my first 13 races up there, and I had a ball. I was up there for 2 months, and we were just, you know, and I lost a bunch of the horses and claims, and I came back with fresh money and took off from there. So without his advice, that never would have happened. I might not even be here today, to tell you the truth.
His advice was good, but you were willing to take it. And I think that's the other side of the coin. You got to, a lot of times, you know, horse trainers are hard heads, and you've got to be willing to take the advice when you're in a slump like that, when you can't see the right way. The person outside has a better look than you do, and you were smart enough to do that, you know?
Yep. I mean, you know, as a matter of fact, we were sitting on the golf course the other morning, and Jimmy and his son were there, and we were talking, and I said to his son, I said, let me tell you something. I says, your father saved my career. I says, and is this something that, you know, I would hope he would pass on to you, because you're a young, energetic, hardworking kid, and, you know, it's those type of things are not forgotten. And I said, and Jimmy said to him, listen, he says, listen, son, if something ever happens to me and you got a question, you go see Eddie Barker. Because I know he knows what to do.
So that great. Was nice. Yeah, very nice.
Well, he is trainer Eddie Barker. He is our guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here tonight. And somebody who, as you heard him say earlier, began his training career sometime around his mid-40s and has really had a lot of success. And it only seems to be getting better, Eddie. These past couple of years have been very good for you.
Well, that has, you know, that has a lot to do with, owners willing to... take a chance on you and put the money up to claim horses and buy horses. And you're only as good as the horses you got in the barn. And, you know, right now I train for three or four different people, but Danny Chen is my primary owner, and Dr. Riegler has a few horses with me. John Carrera has one with me. We've had a very, very, very good relationship, and it started off about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's been very fruitful ever since, you know. And he's an owner that's been in the game a long time. He at one time was the leading owner in Penn National for like 5 years in a row. So he knows the game, and, he knows the ups, he knows the downs, and takes the good with the bad. And if I tell him we need a little time or something's just not right, you know, he says, don't worry about it. Do what you got to do. Best for the horse, you know, and that's, you know, that goes a long way.
Yeah, it's important to have people like that understand the game and let you do what you need to do, because there's a lot of clients that don't really understand it, and you spend as much time educating them as you do training the horses. But
sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's nice when you don't have to do that.
You know, and we've gotten lucky with a lot. You know, he buys these babies. He has a fellow down in Ocala that buys these two-year-olds. And I'll tell you, he does not spend a lot of money on them. And we've done, I mean, some of these horses have been just, like, unbelievable. And when I first got them 4 years ago, he sent in two. And, man, I looked at these horses and I said, oh, my God, what am I going to do with these two? I mean, they were as crooked as anything you've ever seen. And I just said to myself, what am I going to do with these horses in Belmont Park? This is ridiculous. So I decided, I said, Danny, we got to start from scratch with these horses. I know you bought them in a sale. I know they breezed. But if you go on with these horses, with as much issues as they got as confirmational-wise, they're not going to last. I said, so we're going to start from scratch. And I just went back to old school two-year-old training. We breeze them an eighth of a mile every 4 days for a month, and I breeze them a quarter of a mile every 4 days for a month. And then, you know, of course, you know, the bills mount up because, you know, you're taking a whole lot of extra time. But you know what? From that day forward, we've had tremendous success. You know, and I believe doing that, it develops bone, develops the joints, and you can overcome some of these conformational issues, you know. And, Yorkie Poo Princess, for instance, she just went over 500,000. And I'm telling you, if you saw her gallop out there, you'd have to turn another eye. And she's still going. She's still going.
It's amazing, isn't it, Eddie, how some of those horses will really jump up and surprise you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, Mike, I mean, she was, once we got over that two-month program, basically after that, you can just about do anything you want with them. You know, you're ready to go half miles with no problem. And one day, just before we come up to Saratoga, I breezed her and the other horse that I got from Mr. Chen, and two other, I think Gary Golo, maybe Siaka, but we breezed out of the gate. This filly opened up 15 lengths on them.
Wow.
I couldn't. I said, oh, my God. You know, and they're going 47 from the gate block. I said, no way. Yeah, we got 3 clocks on you. So, Jesus. You know. But, she was, she just like, you know, and I still, I look at her and I say to myself, what makes her, you know, you just, you know, you say to yourself, how can she run this fast? I mean, I think we won 5 or 6 stakes with her, and she's just, you know, I mean, she ran, you know, we won the Ruthless and the, what the hell was the other one? I can't even remember, but we won 3 stakes in a row in the wintertime. And some of them horses, I mean, you know, I think Pletcher had a $600,000 horse in there, and, you know, there was another $250, you know, and now here's this horse for $8,000, you know, and she just dominated him.
I can hear Gullo now saying, I don't want to work with that Barker guy anymore. That's why Baffert used to borrow my saddle towels so he could actually get somebody to work in company out of the gate.
I tell you, you want to hear, you know, you hear a story. It's just like you can't make this is one of those really bad beat stories, but it's true. I couldn't wait to get to Saratoga to run this filly, man. Let me tell you. I mean, I knew. I mean, the filly, the other filly that Mr. Chen bought was a horse called Kissing Cassie, and we used to have to put our 10 lengths in front. You know, going a half a mile or 5/8 in order to finish together. So, in any event, I said, this is one time I'm going to step out, you know, and I did. Long story short, I entered in both as an entry, and we're in the second race, I think it was. It was just one of those things where I said, man, this is going to be... this is a payday right here because these horses can't beat her. And don't you know, she rears up in the gate and they scratched her at the gate. So they scratched her, but listen, this is the worst part. The other horse who was part of the entry who used to have to give us 10, you know, she won the damn race. She won the race, purse money only, nothing. No. So that was just, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. But... You know, she went on to, you know, Yorkie Poo, I mean, that Kissing Cassie, she went on to make like 175, 200,000 before we lost her, you know? And, you know, we've had an awful lot of luck with those inexpensive two-year-olds. But again, you know, we just take an awful lot of time with them. And, which one's not back at the knee and both set in the knees and, you know, but... You know, like I said, I think that foundation type of thing really gets over a lot of that conformational problems. So,
yeah,
well, you got to have an owner of the room to go along with it. Most of them, you know, hey, when they're going to run, you know. So,
yeah.
But you know, it's old school type of stuff. But I firmly believe in it, and I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, everybody gets excited when you have a new 2-year-old, and they can't wait to run and. All of that, but if you're patient, I mean, that's one of the biggest keys to our game, and you know that because you're a patient guy, and if you just take your time, you know, you're going to be better off in the long run, and nothing Absolutely. Beats a foundation for a young horse. You know, when you get in a rush, you see some of these horses, they work 2 or 3 times and they run. That's not the best situation, I don't think.
Well, you know, it's what happens, those horses just don't last. You know, they just don't last. I mean, and I would, you know, out of the maybe 12 or 14 two-year-olds I've gotten in the last 4 or 5 years, practically every one of them is still running. Unbelievable, you know. We had a horse we lost up here last year. His name was Factor This. I mean, he made $228,000 in purses, and we lost him for $62,500 and win with him. But altogether, he got back almost $300,000 for a $7,000 purchase, you know.
Yeah.
So those are the things that keep owners in the game.
Yeah, visiting with trainer Eddie Barker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Eddie, you talked earlier about your feed and supply company on Long Island. You talked on the fact that you didn't get into training horses till sometime around your mid-40s. What were the first couple of decades of your life like? What were you doing then?
Well, I was born and raised in Bellport. It's a small little community out on Long Island. I still live there, as a matter of fact. Went to high school there, went to college. I had several different jobs. I ended up being an assistant vice president, branch manager for Marine Mineral Bank in two or three different. I worked for them for about 10 to 12 years. And then a good friend of mine who has passed away, we decided to buy this feed store, and you know, we developed it over a 15, 18 year period into quite a successful company. But like I said, it just got, you know, dealing with the public and, you know, the Financial Times at the time. I said, listen, my wife, I said, listen, kids are out of school, house is almost paid for, I'm going to go do what I want to do. And that's when I decided to become a trainer. I was going to give myself 5 years. And here I am.
Remarkable. Driving over an hour each day to train your horses, too. To me, that's dedication right there, Eddie.
Well, on a Friday night and you're in the ninth race, it's 10 o'clock before I get home.
And you got to turn around and go right back the next morning.
Yep. Some, my wife thinks I'm nuts. She thinks, you know, we're married 52 years, and she's really, really an angel to put up with what I have to go through. But you know what? She's very supportive, and she's always supported me throughout whatever I did. So, you know, you got to have that also.
Does she enjoy the horses and the races and everything too?
Okay, you know, like she'll come up this up in Saratoga for like a week this year, with my grandkids, and you know, she's not she's not an avid horse racing fan. She watches all the races that I'm in and this and that, but you know, she enjoys it. But she's not a horse nut, I guess.
She's an Eddie Barker fan. She's not a horse racing fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How about your kids and your grandkids? Are they into it at all?
Well, I used to bring my daughters down to, you know, they were about, 15, 16, 17, somewhere around there. I used to bring them down to the barn, and, you know, they'd want to make money for school clothes, and, you know, so I used to make them muck out stalls, and, you know, they'd do like three or four stalls and be in the office sleeping, you know. But, yeah. Both my daughters really like the races. They really do. They come up here every year for like a week or so, and it's good for with the kids, you know.
Yeah.
So, I have two grandsons and two granddaughters. They're getting a little old right now. One of them's got turned 17 or 18, and the other one's 12. My two grandsons and my granddaughters are a little bit older than them, but you know they've. I also had them down at the barn mucking out stalls too, so they know a little bit about it.
All right, we're visiting with trainer Eddie Barker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazy Tipton. Eddie, stay with us. We've got to get to a short break. We'll come back and talk more about your career and some of the horses that have really stood out to you, in addition to Yorkie Poo Princess. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fazy Tipton.
Nominations are now open to the Fazig Tipton November Sale, the world's premier breeding stock event. The sale annually produces the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world, and in 2018 sold 22 horses for $1 million or higher. Held the Monday after the Breeders' Cup, this one-night sale offers leading racing and broodmare prospects, proven producers, and selected yearlings in the most electric atmosphere you will find at any thoroughbred auction. Nominate your best today, the Fazig Tipton November Sale, where stars shine brightest.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Millridge offers as agent three quality yearlings to the Saratoga Select Sale by Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, and Pioneer of the Nile. selling 61 yearlings with 79% winners, 5% grade 1 or grade 2 winners, 13% graded place, and 21% stakes place runners since 2005. And since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 34 grade 1 winners, with Oscar Performance, who is standing stud at Millridge, their latest. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Set to strike is Yorkie Poo Princess in behind as they turn for home. Tis Ray Anna and Full House, head-to-head off the turn together. Full House on the outside, Tis Ray Anna giving way toward the rail, and now Yorkie Poo Princess has rallied, and Yorkie Poo Princess has gone right on by Full House and is opening up late, clear by two. Wanders to the outside, though. Full House wanders to the inside, but it is Yorkie Poo Princess who has won it. A length and a half in the end. Full House was second. Tis Ray Anna was third. Big rally from No Sweat to be fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Travis Stone with the call of the Busher Stakes back at Aqueduct in 2017, February 25th, to be exact. It was a day in which Yorkie Poo Princess would record a third consecutive stakes victory for our special guest tonight, who is trainer Eddie Barker. And if you missed any portion of the first half of the program, some great stories from Eddie in the first half of the show, simply head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to a podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure. They are there for you all the time, 24/7, horseracingradio.net. Eddie, a little trip down memory lane for you there. You were trying to remember the third stake that she won in succession there back in 2017. That was it. It was the Busher and Yorkie Poo Princess, as you said earlier, now earnings of over $500,000. She's done pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know, that's one stake I shouldn't forget, because the two previous stakes, you know, she sprinted. And the Busher was a mile and 16th, I think, or a mile and an eighth. And when I first started on my, when I had my own horse, I was in the barn with Leon Blushewitz. And we've been very, very good friends for over 28 years. And one morning he was in the clocker stand, and I was telling him, I said, Blue, I said, I'm gonna run this filly in the Busher. I says, you think two sprints under would be good enough to get that mile and eighth? He said, listen, and I always listen to this guy, because let me tell you something, and I'm never embarrassed to say that I listened to another trainer or got information or got advice from another trainer. He said, if you want to win that race, listen to what I'm telling you. He says, you back that filly up when you're going to breeze her to the quarter pole, and you breeze her from the wire. If you want to breeze three quarters of a mile, you go from the wire. He says, and put two of them into her, and she'll go all day long, and she'll wait for you. And I said to myself, man, that makes a lot of sense, you know? So that's what we did. And she won the race because of him.
Wow.
And I thought it was, you know, I would have never thought of that, to be honest with you. But that's, you know, that's an old school trainer that had some fabulous horses in his day and really knows what he's talking about. And that, and when I was in the paddock that day, I said to Irad, I said, Irad, he said, oh, Eddie, we should be in front by three or four here, huh? I said, no. I says, you let her come out of the gate and just sit back about five or six lengths, and she'll relax for you, and you make one big run at the end. He thought I was nuts. You know, he even told the reporter after the race, he said, I thought Barker was crazy. I thought we were the only speed in the race. And she did. She went into that, you know, from breezing from the wire. You know, she's relaxed going into that first turn. And she sat back, you know, just like the recording, you know, about four or five lengths off the pace. And she had that big kick at the end. I don't believe if I would have put her on the lead, she would have won that race.
Wow. Yeah, Leon Blushewitz, who you mentioned, one of the true top trainers you know, that we've seen historically in the sport. And I know that when you look at his record, he's not going to have the number of wins of a Bob Baffert or a Todd Pletcher, or the number of greatest stakes victories. But as you said just a little bit ago, Eddie, he has been around some really, really good horses. He was the guy who trained Willa on the Move, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah.
Millions, I can't remember, you know, but, you know, like I said, when I first was on my own, I happened to be in the barn with him. Another guy, I picked his brain all the time, you know. And you know what? If you think you're too good to do that, you're never going to learn. And you know, that's been my philosophy. I still try to, you know. I mean, I never forget one time I said to the chief, I was up here, I was really having a rough time, and I said, I greasy horses, you know, 5/8 of a mile and a minute and change, run them back 6 days later, and they'd have nothing. And I was saying to myself, what the hell's going on here, you know? And so I asked him, I said, chief, he says, what are you doing before they breeze?
That's a good impersonation. Wow.
Yeah. So I says, what do you mean, what do I do? He says, if you don't prepare for that breeze is your race, buddy. And I never forgot it. And,
wow.
You know, I do that now. You know, before I'm going to breeze, 3 or 4 days before they breeze, I give them a nice 2-minute lick, and they're ready for that breeze, and it doesn't knock them out. And that came from, that's old school, you know. And again, where would you ever come up with something like that if you don't know yourself?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a funny story. I don't know if it was that year or the following. I guess it was that year. And he said, what's the matter, Buck? You're a little down in the dumps. I said, no, I'm not down in the dumps. He said, no, I can see something's bothering you. I said, well, chief, I said, the feed man's chasing me. I got to pay the guy, the blacksmith on COD. I said, and I got this horse on Friday, man, and this horse got the win for me. He said, don't worry, you got it right? I said, yeah. So, sure, she wins by about 10, pays like $18. The next morning, I am the only trainer that he ever gave a nickname to. And he says, fourth and long. And he called me fourth and long for the next 15 years. What a great guy, you know?
Yeah, he was amazing.
He was. Absolutely. I mean, he was just, and he's a guy, like you said, you know, if you're having a problem with a horse, he'd come over and look at your horse. Come over and, you know, help you. You don't get that anymore, you know? The game has completely changed.
Yeah. No, he was that kind of guy. I got lucky. Richard Mandela knew him really well, and we both shipped into Gulfstream Park for the Orchid Handicap with a couple of fillies, and Richard set it up so we could go to his barn. And I'll tell you, that was one of the best weeks of my life, was just being at that barn and listening to him and his stories and watching how he did things. And yeah. he couldn't have been a nicer host. I mean, anything you needed, anything you wanted, yeah. You know, I mean, it was outstanding.
He was going to appear on this program right before he passed away. And we never got a chance to sit down and do it. It's one of the biggest regrets I've had in what, 16 years on radio now, is I never got the chance to sit down and visit with him for a conversation like this.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
My opinion, he's probably one of the best horsemen that ever lived and one of the nicest guys that ever lived. I mean, he's just one of the, wouldn't hurt a fly.
Yeah, yeah. So. Eddie, you talk about, you were telling us during the commercial break, you mentioned old school a few times throughout the interview, and you said right now you have 16 to 18 horses in the barn, and you like to be the guy that's there every single morning, putting your hands on them, seeing them every day. How important is that to being a good horse trainer?
Well, Mike, I think it's extremely important because, you know, if you have the knowledge, you can see things physically coming on horses that and prevent problems weeks ahead of time. You know, you can feel a little feeling, a little heat, a little this, a little that, you know, a little pulse, you know, and then you know, you got to be proactive. You got to say, woof, let's start taking care of this now. And I tell you, I've had the highest number of starts per stall in NYRA for the last 3 years. I mean, I averaged about maybe 10 to 12 stalls my whole life, you know. And, and so I get a lot of races out of my horses because of that reason. I very, very rarely tap the horse. I mean, I have foot massages. I got whirlpools. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
We got magnetic blankets. I mean, we got everything you can possibly think of. And I believe it, all this stuff takes time and work, and it pays off. That's just, I think that's got a lot to do with why I can get so many races out of my horses, you know.
Well, it paid off for you last year, too, with an $18,000 bonus for taking down the brand-new contest that NYRA created, which was an under-20s claiming contest. Tell me a little bit about that, Eddie.
Well, I think it's a great program because, you know, on the backside here, the small trainers are really having a rough time. They really are. I mean, the reason being, good horses don't funnel down to trainers like myself, or guys with, 15, 14 horses, because, the super trainers got 200 or 300 in their bond, and those, I can remember years ago, you got 36 stalls, and that was it, man. You didn't get any more. And those extra, I remember distinctly in Tommy Miles' barn one day, a big, tall Irish guy from Boston came in, and he said, Mr. Miles, he says, Alan Jurgen sent me down. I got four horses, and he says, you might have some room for me. He doesn't. And I'll tell you what, man, two of those horses were killers. One of the horses' name was Good Day Mate, and another horse's name was Robartic. Now, that would never happen today. Never. It just never would have the opportunity for that to happen. So, I'm getting off a little tangent here, but that's one of the problems with our business right now. There's not a real fair distribution of good horses. Jude, you're only as good as your the horses you got in the barn. And, sometimes they're all clicking at once, and then all of a sudden, none of them are clicking.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's chicken one day and feathers the next, it's hard for smaller outfits to get good horses. I mean, people, the first thing they look at is the standings, right? And they go to the top trainer and work their way down. And, the ones that the top trainers reject are the horses that probably nobody really wants anyway. Because if they were any good, the top trainers would lap them up, you know? So, you have to get a little lucky. You have to do those extra things like you do and take care of the horses. And I think the smaller trainers, they understand that in order to keep their clients in business, they have to earn checks. They have to run their horses, frequently and in spots where they can earn some money so that the owners don't feel that pain of writing that big check every month. So it's a delicate balance, and it's a lot harder than people think. I wrote a piece once, if it was easy, everybody would do it. Everybody wants to be a trainer. The grandstand's full of people that want to be trainers, but it's not that easy.
And the fact is, you still have to, if you have 16, 18 horses, you still have to compete against those super trainers that have 200, 300 horses and have those stakes level type horses in their barn. Even their allowance horses and claiming horses can be tough to beat. Eddie, how on earth do you stay competitive when you have to face that type of competition day in and day out?
Well, number one, you got to keep your horses healthy, keep them happy, try to put them in the best spot you can. And, that's not an easy question to answer, to tell you the truth. And a lot of, I don't even think about it all the time, to tell you the truth. I just try to keep these horses as healthy as I possibly can, as fit as I possibly can, and run them in spots where, you know, you're 3-1 or less if you can. If you're, you know, 10-15-1, you're in the wrong spot. But sometimes you have to be in the wrong spot because, like you just said, you know, these purses are enormous, and a third-place finish for an owner will pay the bill for the month. And at the end of the day, that's the whole deal. You gotta, you know, I try to keep the vet bills down as much as I possibly can, and you know, because everything else is so expensive. So you know, but, and that's why it's important to run these horses. Sometimes it hurts you. As a matter of fact, it does hurt your percentage. But and I know a lot of people are really, you know, enamored with percentages, but you know what? If I can keep my owners in business and keep them paying the bills, you know, by running a second, a third, a fourth, that percentage doesn't really mean that much to me.
Well, for those of you who may be just tuning in to Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton here tonight, we are visiting with Mr. Fourth and Long himself. That's Eddie Barker here on HRRN. And Eddie, you had a horse that was pretty darn good. We talked about Yorkie Poo Princess, who earned now more than $500,000 for her career. You had another horse that's earned $440,000, and that mare was named Mies Rocks. Tell me a little bit about her.
She was incredible. I got that horse in the winter of a 3-year-old year, and actually, she had run in Saratoga, I think, twice the year before that, and the trainer that had the horse told him to give the horse away. But here's a funny story with that filly. It took me 3 months to get her fit enough to even start breezing. She was so big and so heavy. And I never really sat her down. I mean, I did a lot of two-minute licks with her, you know, a lot of slow 3/8, just trying to get her fit, you know. So one morning I'm on the rail. I said to Gary Contessa, I said, Gary, you got a horse in there that can go 5/8. I said, I got to try to get a line on this horse I got. He says, yeah, we'll come out the next set with us. So I said, all right. So we're up on the rail, and he had George Chavez on the horse, and I had my exercise rider on. Now, in any event, we broke off at the 5/8 pole. From the quarter pole to the wire, this filly opened up 12 lengths on. I mean, just as easy as you, you know, under a hand ride. And he started screaming, you set me up. This is the last time you're going to get it. Gary, I swear to God Almighty, I never set this horse down. So he turns around and he says to Chavez's agent, well, whoever that was, you better get on her. But she just beat a horse that just won an allowance race by 5. So he set me up. But in any event, she was oh, my God. You bring her over there. I mean, I think I won 6 or 7 New York Bred Stakes with her. She would run her race every single time. I mean, she was just an amazing, amazing New York Bred filly. She was the best New York Bred filly and mare on the grounds for 2 years. Nobody could beat her. I mean, she was just, you know, and she looked like a colt. I mean, she didn't look like a filly, you know. But she was a really, really, really phenomenal horse. I really, she was one of my favorites. You know, she really was.
As a New York guy, what was it like to train a horse named Jeter?
It was pretty good. I liked that. I cleaned him 3 different times. he was a war horse, man. I'll tell you. I think I won a couple of races when I had a couple of second, couple of third. But man, you bring him over there, if you could get his feet right, you weren't going to beat him in the class that he was in. I can tell you that. He had phenomenally bad feet, but he was a gainer. I'll tell you that.
Did you ever hear from Derek Jeter? Did he ever want to come out and see the horse run?
No, not really. I wish he did.
Are you a Yankee guy or a Mets guy?
It's hard to say because I got one owner that's a big time Met fan. And another one's a Yankee fan, so when they come out, I put different hats on.
Very politically correct of you.
You touched on some of those owners earlier in the program. Talk about some of the guys that are with you now, and or maybe even the ladies that have helped you along the way and are still helping you today, Eddie.
Well, I've been Danny Chen has been with me for maybe 5 or 6 years. You know, we started off with one horse, two horses, you know, and now he has 10. And he's very, very, he's a very easy guy to deal with. He knows the game, and he can take the good with the bad. I have a Dr. Riegler, who's a orthopedic surgeon. He has a New York Orthopedics in Manhattan. He's got one horse with me now. One just got claimed. And we've had a lot of fun together. He's a really good guy. And John Guerrera, J&M Racing, they've been with me on and off for the last 15 years. A truly good guy. And I got a nice little horse for him right now that we're just trying to get ready, hopefully, in the next 2 or 3 weeks to run.
Trainer Eddie Barker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Eddie, you look back on some of those other names and some of the stars that have come through your stable. I mentioned Yorkie Poo Princess. I mentioned Mies Rocks. How about a gelding by the name of For Love and Honor? Tell me about that horse.
He was the hardest knocking horse I ever trained. I think I had him for 2 or 3 years. I can tell you on the thoroughbred sheets, he never ran worse than a 2 and never ran better than a 1 for 3 years.
Wow.
How about that one? He was just a really, really, really good horse. But I'll tell you, Drew, he had one problem. He had one little stupid quirk. When he went up on the track, he would look around, and sometimes it would be 5 minutes and sometimes it would be 35 minutes. But you couldn't move him with a bulldozer, and you just had to let him just go out, and that was his only quirk. And when he got claimed from me 2.5 years later, those guys couldn't train him. They couldn't train him because they didn't know, you know, they were pulling him with a rope. They had a my God. I watched it. I was getting sick to my stomach.
That's brutal.
He was a war horse, man.
Yeah.
Another horse I really loved was a horse called Reef Chief. He used to come from 30 lengths out of the 3/8 bowl and win by a nose, I bet you, at least 5 or 6 times. And he would be so sore, he would lay in that stall for 2 or 3 days. You know, we'd ice him this and that, and 3 weeks later, here he comes again. just the kind of horse you'd just love to have in the barn.
Is there any horse that you had that you know you did a great job with, probably a horse nobody knows about, but a horse that you feel like maybe it was one of your best training jobs?
Yep, a horse called My Donna Jean. I claimed her for $17,000, and I think I won like $250 with her.
Wow.
And she was just a skinny, skinny... I got knocked for this claim like you couldn't believe. But I'll tell you the reason I claim, he used the sheets a lot to claim with. And when Jimmy Jurgens had that horse, the horse was running really good numbers. And when this other trainer got him, the horse went completely backwards. And I said, you know what? If there's nothing broken, I'll get that horse to run those numbers again. And that's my philosophy. If I claim a horse and there's nothing broken and most of it's neglect, all you got to do is give them like 60 days and get them happy, get rid of the ulcers, get rid of the bad feet, the teeth, and get them happy again. I honestly believe they'll run those numbers every time. And that's what she did. She was a really, really competitive horse. As a matter of fact, ran her, the first time I ran her, she ran second, beating the nose, and then she wheeled off 3 wins in 4 weeks. She made $125,000 the first 3 races.
Wow. That's great.
Wow.
Yeah, she was an amazing little horse.
So many trainers have come on the show too, Eddie, and they talk about just, you know, keeping the horses happy. And you've kind of reiterated that theme throughout the interview here tonight. If you can get them right and keep them happy, they're born to run. They'll perform. They'll do their thing.
Absolutely. I I you know, sometimes you might get an old, you know, like some old 8, 9, 10 year old gelding. They'll just say, I had enough, and they will run it, no matter how happy they are. But most of the time, if I claim a horse, I try not to claim horses from, you know, the Pletches and Asmussens and those type of guys, because, you know, I believe, number one, they're not putting the horse in the claiming race to win with them. They're putting them in there to lose. And they've done everything that, you know, one could think of to get them to run. And if you, you know, you end up claiming a horse from them, I think you get embarrassed. I'd rather claim the horse from a guy that I know doesn't pay attention, or a woman that doesn't pay, you know. And one time horse, the horse had ability within the last year, you know. I've been very, very successful in doing that.
Well, Eddie, it's been a great visit here tonight. We're just about out of time, but a lot of fun to hear your story and all the stories that you're able to share with us here tonight. We'll encourage people to head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our trainer talk shows. But listen, all the best moving forward, my friend. Thank you for spending some time with us here today, and look forward to seeing you when we get to the spa here in a couple of weeks.
Great. Mike and June, thank you very much, and it was a real pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on.
Eddie, enjoy it. Best of luck moving forward.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. He is trainer Eddie Barker here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Wow. So many great stories there. I don't even know where to start, JT. So many great stories, and a guy who just loves his horses and loves to care for his horses. And he drives over an hour every day to get to the stable. How about that?
There's a lot of people that have a commute, but I'll tell you, it's a lot harder at 3 a.m.
And he loves it.
Yeah. No, there's something about it. I don't know what it is. You can't wait to get there.
Yeah, you have to love it if you're going to do this game. All right. Well, again, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check us out on social media at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook as well. For our special guest, Eddie Barker, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.